Hello, everyone, and welcome to another expert interview at the Innovation and Creativity Summit 2017. I'm very happy to have Gijs van Wulffen with us today. Gijs is a LinkedIn influencer when it comes to the topic of innovation and the author of multiple books on the subject, including the one he's most famous for, the fourth innovation methodology, which has been translated into many languages and which you give conference for around the world. Gijs, it's wonderful speaking with you again.
Yes, hi, Nick. Yeah, nice to see you again.
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned, you've been very busy over the last year or two, going all around the world teaching your fourth methodology. It must be quite exciting.
It is. Well, you know, actually, so I am now 57, Nick, and I haven't traveled until I got 53. I made a methodology with a map, and now this map takes me all over the world. So, for me, it's like a young dream coming, the dream of a young guy coming true. So I'm feeling very blessed.
Perfect. So for people who aren't aware of you or haven't seen your work on LinkedIn, can you give us a brief background as to where you started and how you got into innovation?
Okay, well, actually I am a business economist. I studied marketing and I went to work in the food sector, food industry for 7 years. Marketing soups and children's candy. Then, you know, and I was, it was a complete disaster to innovate. Everybody was so conservative, and I tried to push my ideas through the innovation funnel, but, you know, they all failed, and I only got a lot of trouble on my way. Then I became a consultant. You can always become a consultant, right? So I did that very young, and I was a consultant for 12 years, first for Ernst & Young, doing strategy and marketing advice, and later for Boer & Kroon. Nobody knows them outside the Netherlands. It's a kind of strategy boutique, reorganizing big companies who got into trouble, you know, because they were too conservative and their revenues went down and they had to reorganize. So I did that work. And then I was now 15 years ago exactly, you know, I quit my job. I had a wonderful job and being a boardroom consultant, but what kind of added value did I have? You know, almost none. Well, we got the company refinanced, but in the end, they didn't do anything with all the advice we gave them. And it was so frustrated for me that I said, okay, you know, I want to solve this. How is it possible that existing organizations have so much difficulty in getting innovation launched at the right time and doing the right things at the right time? And so I quit my job. I part-time studied creativity. We didn't call it design thinking then, we just call it creativity. I did that for 2 years, and then I combined my business insights and my experience with the learnings from creativity. And then I wanted to unfuzzy the front end, I wanted to make a real methodology to start innovation at the front end. Now, this was a long time ago. It was even before YouTube existed, or, you know, or the business model canvas didn't exist, or even Lean was not there yet. And so I made this methodology. I called FORTH, fourth. I made it in the form of an expedition, because on an expedition, you get people outside the box, and that's where it all starts. Innovation all starts where we go beyond our present borders. You know, that's the moment when we go over our present borders. That's the moment innovation really starts. It's all getting new insights first, and then you get new ideas. So I structured the start of innovation in a journey of 20 weeks, and in five phases. Full steam ahead, observe and learn, raise ideas, test ideas, homecoming. So fourth is an acronym of the five first letters of each island. And it takes people in a group from inside the box to outside the box, and then to inside the box again, otherwise nothing happens in a conservative company. So I wrote books on it. My first book, when I made the methodology and it really works, in 2006, and then in 2009, another book in 2012, another book. And then somebody asked me, what's your big dream? I said, well, if it works in the Netherlands, it could work anywhere. And then I started to blog and write in English. And then I wrote my book, The Innovation Expedition. And by being asked by LinkedIn to become one of their influencers. I just had a wonderful platform, still wrote my blogs, and it was suddenly read by 5,000, 10,000, 100,000 people. And this is the way how the methodology spread all over the world. And so the map got translated in more than 13 languages, and it's there in Russian and Chinese and Japanese. And I follow the map. So people say, hey, can you train me? I come over and I train you so you can do the apply the methodology yourself. There's no business model in it. I just love to stimulate innovation all over the world. And that's what I do now most, doing keynotes, workshops, or trainings from Brazil to Japan or from Cape Town to Canada.
I think I've obviously got the book as well, and we've spoken about it previously. What I like about the fourth methodology, and I'm being quite unbiased here, is compared to a lot of other books on innovation, it is very structured. It is actually a methodology. And as you say, it takes people through a 20-week process to help yes. them get the right type of ideas for their business. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's important to have a methodology for innovation when a lot of people think that innovation should be all about being free and just trying out whatever and seeing where it goes?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, innovation is on everybody's calendar. It's on everybody's agenda. But everybody struggles with how. What do I do? How do I start it then? Okay, so let's innovate. But what do I have to do now? Now, to make it utterly simple, innovation is all about both chaos and structure. Great innovation is a kind of structured chaos, or that's what it is. So the more I get closer to the equator, the more sun there is, the more chaos there is. So when I apply my methodology or talk to it in Spain or Turkey or Brazil, they love the structuredness. You know, tak, 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 tak. That's what I'm not a European Dutch, so I'm semi-German, and that's what the Germans do, right? Tak, 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 tak. That's, yeah. Now, on the other hand, when I go, for example, to Germany, where I applied my methodology, or it's been applied in Japan, they are too structured, so you have to bring in some chaos, right? So force help you to go beyond your borders, right? First in observe and learn, and to reach out to people and to get new insights, and then you get new ideas. So it's a good balance between structure and chaos. Chaos is wonderful to get great ideas, but then in the end, if there's no structure, nothing materializes. And when you structure, you have a real good machine or a real good gun, but there are no creative bullets to shoot. So it's all about a balance between structure and chaos. And actually, that's what innovation is, right? Innovation is a big paradox. On the one hand, you have to be creative. On the other hand, you have to be able to implement it. You first have to go outside the box, but you have to put it inside the box again. Right? It's all about being flexible on those axes to get on the first half. You have to be here, and then you have to be here. And the methodology helps.
Absolutely. And just picking up on one of the things you said there, it's about bringing it back into the company to actually get implemented. And that's where I think a lot of the other ways of innovating, which are all about just idea generation, end up falling apart. Because unless you get someone to say yes to your idea, eventually it's just not going to go anywhere.
No. What I normally do, suppose here is the innovation funnel, right? So here is the idea, and here's a market introduction. What I used to do is try to push my idea. What happens is the harder I push, the harder they push back. Why should I here stick my neck out for your idea? You're a nice guy, Nick, but you know, I won't stick my neck out. I would say, oh no, I'm sorry, Nick. It doesn't really fit the mission and vision of our company. Whoa, right? Or it doesn't fit the ERP system. So the trick is, and you don't even have to use my methodology, but one of the most important lessons learned is that you can invent alone, but you can't innovate alone. So what I do in the methodology is, if this is the funnel, we get here the marketing guy, the sales guy, the product development, we got production, we got procurement, we got service, we got IT, we got finance. We all get them into a team here at the start. And together we come up with ideas. And we together we transform ideas into business cases. They get accepted. And then here we work on the children we made ourselves here, right? So it's all about creating internal support. And you do that by innovating together in a team, not push an idea here, but get the team up here, also get it connected here. Normally you would have a steering committee who would look how we've been doing. But, you know, I get the steering committee on board. I call them the extended team, and they join the journey. And that's why how they learn too. And that's why how they get confident enough to say yes to those innovative business cases at the end of fourth. So I think that the most important thing for people to learn is that it's not about you. It's not about ideas. It's about, you know, our idea and our business. And creating internal support from the start is the best condition to reach the end of the funnel successfully.
What about when the people who are the decision makers, which are the CEO or your boss or your manager, aren't able to be part of that core team at the beginning? And they're the ones who usually put the brakes on.
Now, why aren't they? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you know, this is what I hear all the time. Now, they are normal people. They have 24 hours in a day. Why can't they be on an ideation team? Well, they say to you when they say, no, it's not for me. You know, they are too busy, right? But if you won't spend as CEO 6 days in a period of 20 weeks to join the team to make the next generation projects or services, what do you say? It doesn't have any priority to me. Now, when a CEO says that, I said, okay, if you won't spend 6 days to help your people create your new products of tomorrow, why should I join this journey? It's your company. Well, just wait. I just wait 1 or 2 years until the shit gets bigger. And then you will come back and say, guys, we have to innovate now. And then you always start smiling like you do now, right? They always, you know, smile and say, this is a very direct Dutchman, and I really am.
And it's this concept of waiting until, as you say, the shit's hit the fan. That's when most companies think, oh, now is the time we actually need to innovate. Is that a bit too late, or is that actually something?
Yes, but that's a good question. So in my last book, The Innovation Maze, I made a kind of a bell curve. You know, products and organizations are like people, you know, we get born, we grow, you know, we get over the hill like me, and then you die, right? Yeah. Now, when do you need to innovate? Not here, as startup. Here you're growing. But then here, at the end of the growth, right, innovation takes time. It takes, on average, for products, 36 months from idea to launch, 3 years. And then it will take 1 or 2 or 3 years to generate money. That means that the moment you're at the top of your bell curve, you want to create a new one, you should have started 6 years before that, you know, to generate the profits from new. So this means I call it the sweet spot for innovation here, right? That's the moment you want to innovate. But most of the time we think, oh, you know, it goes endless up our market, and then suddenly, oops, markets get saturated. There come more competitors, our market share drops, and then you get a double blow, and suddenly, ooh, you can't control revenue anymore, so you have to cut costs. Now, on the top here of the curve, you know, a company is always in reorganization. You have to cut costs again, and then next year after, there are more layoffs. In a company, that's a very bad time to innovate. Why? People won't stick their neck out. Under pressure, you know, you say, okay, sit still. I hope nobody sees me, right? And then the reorganization is over, and then you feel confident again, and you have to feel confident, and you have to feel comfortable to go beyond your borders. Otherwise, you sit there, you know, like a duck in the lights of a car driving, right, to watch you. So this means that, you know, there are two sweet spots. One is here, the moment you want to innovate. And then it is, okay, after the last reorganization, everybody knows, okay, now we have to do something different. So this is the moment we have to innovate, right? So those are the two sweet spots for innovation. And when you're not on those two sweet spots, you should wait, because you know you have only one chance to start an innovation project. If you come up with an idea now, I said, no, Nick, it's not really the time. I'm sorry. You know, we're not going to give this priority. And you come again 3 months later, say, what a stubborn guy you are, right? You can only launch your idea once or your project once. So pick there the right moment. Now, on the moment here, where you're still at the end of the growth phase, the good news is, yes, there's money. There's money and there's time because the company goes well. The only point is there is no urgency on the work floor because we're still growing. So what I see is which companies pick that point for innovation. Two kinds of companies. First of all, family-owned companies who think, you know, far beyond next year or the year after. We think, okay, what will the next generation do? So they have a much longer planning period. And companies with very strong leaders. Because this is because I, as leader, say, okay, guys, it's going great now, but we have to find out the next practice in our industry, and we have to do it. It's by leading by example by a strong visionary leader. Now, when those two things are not there, you know, most of them, they, oops, oh, shit. Oh, we have to reorganize once, reorganize twice, and then we are here, we have to innovate. The positive news there is there is urgency. Everybody knows, well, you know, we lost some colleagues here, so we have to step up. On the bad news is there is no money or little money, and we have only short term to innovate. So here you see, here is time to do some revolutionary. There's time to come to think about revolutionary innovations. Here it's always we have to go for the quick win or the low-hanging fruit or whatever you call them, right? It's more the evolutionary innovation because we need them next year to grow the top line again. But those are the two sweet spots. Those are the two sweet spots, and you know, just wait until you are at one of those sweet spots. Otherwise, there is no internal support, and when there is no internal support, nothing materializes.
So when you're waiting for these moments of internal support, these sweet spots, there's still some tips I know that you have on how to get people to actually listen to your ideas.
Yes, yes, because it doesn't mean that you have to sit still and do nothing. No, it's all about making people nervous. That's what you should do as innovator. Or you can, in a more positive way, you can say you inspire them, right? So what do you do? Well, just start emailing to your management team. Hey, there's this new business model coming in this sector. That's interesting. You say, hey, in the US, there are new startups doing it a totally different way. And you email them. When you organize customer panels, and customer panels among youngsters say, oh, you're just an old brand for old people, invite them to join a customer panel like that. Or, for example, if there are technological developments or R&D developments, reach out to universities and take your management team to a university saying, hey, these are the next technologies coming up. The point is, just try to inspire them. Don't say to them, you have to innovate. No, you know, they're all bright people. So the point is, you have to let them draw their own conclusions, and you have to bring them on the right spots. So that's what you should do as innovator. And then the moment it is, okay. So, okay, guys, we need to do really something. And then the question is, well, Nick, do you have a plan? And then you put out of your bag the plan you have there already for 2 years, right, sitting there. I say, yes, I have a plan here. And then you have the right moment. Now, I'm Dutch, so in the Netherlands, we plant a lot of tulips, right? Now, when do you plant your tulips in the garden? It's not in the summer, when it's high growth phase, no, because it's too hot. It's not in the winter, not in the crisis, right? Because it's too cold. You plant your tulips in spring or in autumn. So look for spring and autumn in your company, okay?
Have you got any examples to help bring this to light? Because I know a lot of people, when they hear about methodologies, it all seems a bit overwhelming.
But yes.
Let's talk about some ways that companies have actually used this way of thinking.
Okay, I like to come up with three examples. The first example is Bruil, B-R-U-I-L. Medium-sized company, work only 350 people, and they work in concrete. You know, they make wet concrete, right, to build buildings or prefab concrete. Now, we had a building crisis. Now, from 2008 until 2013, they lost 45% of their revenues, 4-5%. They had three reorganizations. So this is a family-owned company. They tried to keep the labor on, but, you know, they had to fire some people. And their margins were even worse because, you know, everybody gave concrete away just to keep the factories running. They had to innovate. And so there was the extended team of the shareholders that were on the team. The board was on the team. We had a core team of 10 people. They don't have an innovation department, right? They were just, they were several factories making concrete. And so we went with them on the journey. And the first journey is observe and learn, start learning from other sectors. So they start learning from other sectors. And so what are chances here for us? And they went to other sectors not to get ideas, no, to get new insights. And they came back in observe and learn. We have four workshops where the core team brings back learnings. Hey, I've been to this sector. I talked to this person. Wow, and we can learn this from this sector. Interesting. Somebody else has been somewhere else. So what you do is you get the blinders off, right? If you're making concrete for 25 years, the world is like this. So you first have to open up. Then, now this phase is the incubation phase for ideas, because then we had with the 14 people from the team, we had three outsiders. And then on our ideation workshop, we had 964 ideas, 964, boom, it was there because they were inspired. So we selected the top 15 ideas, 1-5, the top 15 ideas. We worked them out. So now we were in the ideation phase, and then we went back to the test phase, and we went back with the ideas to customers. So we connect customers and we say, okay, we got these ideas. What do you think of them? And they came back with their feedback, and we improved those ideas. In the last phase, we choose 5 top concepts to work out as business cases. And they, in 4 weeks, in pairs, they develop business cases. And at the end of the 20-week journey, they presented 15 business cases to the extended team. Now, the shareholders were part of the extended team, so they were on the journey, right? So they learned a lot too. And that's why they said yes to all the 5 business cases. Now, this was 2 years ago. So of course, they had low-hanging fruit because they need to innovate. Now, one of the things is they call it the silo service for tiles. You know how you make tiles, you know, with tile glue. They make tile glue also. And normally when you got a big supermarket, you have to have new tiles, you have those sacks, those 25-kilogram sacks, you know. You put it in there, put water in it, and you mix it. That's been the same for 100 years, only we now have a drilling machine to do it. Now, they had the idea of why don't we bring already wet glue to them so they don't have to. When you do, you got 3 pallets of sacks there and a container full of garbage afterwards. But the main problem was that the tilers didn't earn any money anymore. There was one man continuously busy with making tile glue. And they had the point, why do we make dry tile glue? Why don't we make wet tile glue? So they developed a tile glue which is wet. They put it in silos. They put the silo to the floor to be tiled, and they just can pour it on the floor. Now they have introduced this, and it's a massive success. Why? Because the tilers, normally they have 4 people working. Now they only need 3. This means they can improve their margins by 20 to 25%. Now, every big tiler in the Netherlands wants this tile glue. It was a very simple solution. This was low-hanging fruit. The most revolutionary thing they did was 3D printing. Now they are, in concrete, they are the leading example in the world of how to 3D print architectonic concrete. So what was the friction? The customer friction was of the architect. Half of the architects are without a job at this moment. Why? It was a building crisis. You only build standard buildings. And when you have something specially made for you, it's expensive because the architect makes all kinds of original things which are expensive to make. So what did they do? So that was the friction from the architect. Now with 3D printing, with no normal prefab concrete, it takes 4 weeks. First you have to make a mold, then you have to pour it in, then you have to check if the mold was right or not, and then, And now, but the architects always, they draw 3D. It's all CAD/CAM 3D. So now what they developed was they had an old packing robot in one of their old factories. They rebuild it into a 3D printing robot. They connect partnered with a startup of young guys who had the software. They developed a special concrete to be 3D printed. And now they are operational for 16 months and they are the world's leading 3D printing unit of architectonical concrete, which is wonderful. Now, the most proud I am is not of the business cases, but they say that there's a saying in a fisherman, when you are a fisherman, that the main catch is the bycatch and the bycatch is the main catch. And the main catch was to get business cases to get revenues. But they said during those 20 weeks, those 15 people, they got so inspired and they, they talked to customers, they know how to brainstorm, they made business cases, there is a different, it really influenced their corporate culture. And now there's a cult, everybody became so much more entrepreneurial again, that's the main catch is actually, that people have become much more entrepreneurial now. So that's the case of Brel, the concrete maker in the Netherlands.
That's a great one. It's a lovely concrete example, as we say in England. But is there any examples you have maybe from outside the traditional business world?
Yes. Well, actually, Forth is used in 3/4 of all the implementations in services or in social innovation. Now I trained in Forth Andrew Bogori, who was head of Uganda from the UNHCR. They have in the a problem in refugee. He had 3 refugee camps in Uganda with 100,000 people in there. The problem in refugee camp is that women and young women are not safe for men. They get violated and they get harassed. And how come? And he used the Ford methodology to come up with a solution. Now, women are responsible for cooking food. And for cooking food, you need fire. And for fire, you need wood. They make they make their fire from charcoal, but you need wood to get it started. Now, as there's a refugee camp in a long place, first the woods are next to it. But, you have to travel more and more and more to further and further into the woods to get wood. And that was the moment and the place where all those women and young girls get harassed by men. So they thought, how can we create a safer environment? And how can we protect these, make it for women more safe? Then they come up with, what if we don't use wood, but we use banana peelings, because they have banana plantations there. So what they do now is they make briquettes of banana peelings briquettes, and they use that now to start fire with the charcoal. Now the advantage is that these briquettes, they burn very fast and easy and long, much more longer than charcoal, so 3 times as long. Now this means when they burn 3 times as long, you need 3 times less wood to get it started with. So this means you only have to go out once every 3 weeks instead of, you know, once every week. And in this way, women have to get out of the camps less, by which they are safer. It's a very simple example of well, how a methodology helps of generate a very simple idea.
You must be very proud of that one.
Yes, I'm very proud of that one. Yeah. Unfortunately, I wasn't there, but he sent me pictures. You know, they had also 1,000 ideas on the wall. The great thing about innovation is when you have successful innovation, you know, you feel so proud and it works for years and it empowers so many people. That's why it's worth all the trouble, Nick.
Yeah. We're coming up to the end of the interview, unfortunately. I'm sure, like with many other ones, I could speak with you for hours on end. But one thing I'd like to ask you to leave the people with, which I ask all the experts for, is do you have one tip or one actionable insight that people can try out quickly over the course of an afternoon or a week to get some value out of the methodology we've been talking about today?
Yes. Well, the most important point is for you as innovator, you're often young guys, you sit like this because you feel all the energy and you want to do it, right? But the point is that you have to sit back like this. And the point is that you have to pick the right moments. You have to be patient, right? You have to build up awareness. And that's a job in itself. But you can only start innovation in your company only once for the first time. So pick the right moments, don't be too eager, and start building awareness. That's what your role is. Start building awareness that we need to innovate. And don't blame everybody that, oh, you don't want to innovate, you don't want to innovate. No. People not wanting to innovate accept that it's normal. Now, what I used to try to innovation is a struggle, right? But what helped me a lot was that you learn to love the struggle. And you're much more relaxed in it, and then you get much more effective.
Perfect. We're going to get links down to all of your resources below the video. Can you just let people know what they can find if they go there?
What they can find, yes. So, well, I advise you to go to www.forth-innovation.com. There you can find the methodology. You can find maps for you to download in 12 languages. You'll find 20 checklists from the book. You can download there for free. Please don't tell my publisher. So that's all for free. And then there's also my personal website if you'd like to interact with me more. It's www.gijsvanwulven.com, and there's more information about me and my speeches.
Perfect. Gijs, it's been wonderful speaking with you, and I look forward to speaking again.
Well, thank you, Nick, because I'd like to make you a compliment too. I think it's a great initiative, and I hope you will have a very successful Innovation and Creativity Summit this year and many years to come.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
My pleasure.
Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your All Access Pass now.